All right.
Great.
Good morning, everyone. I'd like to call this homelessness committee meeting to order. Today's date is Wednesday, September 17th, 2025. Councilmember Furman, I'll be chairing this meeting for Chair Pena today. And first, I'd like to thank our host for giving us the space to borrow. And thank everyone for attending. So I'd like to call a roll call, please.
City of Light.
Present.
City of Cathedral City. City of Coachella. Desert Healthcare District. City of Desert Hot Springs.
Here.
City of Indian Wells.
Here.
City of Indio.
Here.
City of La Quinta. City of Palm Desert.
Here.
City of Palm Springs.
Here.
City of Rancho Mirage.
Here.
Riverside County.
Here.
Torres Martinez Desert Cahuilla Indians.
All right, thank you. And for the record, I'd like to welcome Councilmember O'Keefe from Rancho Mirage for joining us. And if I could ask everyone to stand and have our director, Tom Kirk, lead us in a pledge, if you would.
My honor. Please stay with me. Pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, liberty, and justice for all.
Thank you, sir. Right. The next item is public comment items on agenda items. Do we have any comments? Yes, we will call Cathedral City Assistant Chief, correct?
Deputy Chief.
Deputy Chief, I'm sorry.
No.
Rick Sanchez.
Sir.
He's going to have some comments for us. Floor is yours, sir.
I just want to say thank you guys for having us here today. Like Kirby said, Rick Sanchez, Deputy Chief for Cathedral City. We attend the public safety one. This is our first time coming to the HLO one. I brought with me Commander Nathaniel Hanley, who runs our HLO program, who wants to just give you guys an update on some of the success stories we've had with the program.
Thank you for having us here today. My name is Nate Hanley. I'm a commander for the Cathedral City Police Department. I'm happy to be here and to report that we have successfully this year permanently housed four of our unhoused residents in our city through the help with Coachella Valley Assisting Governments and the CV First Housing Program. They have helped us permanently house these four individuals who would be still on the street today, living in terrible conditions. Additionally, they also helped us put somebody in temporary housing recently, and they have been an asset to our city and to our homeless liaison program in the last few years. Also wanted to say thank you very much to the Justice Outreach team, because they also assisted us during times where unhoused people needed resources. And Telecare has also been an asset as well. And I think it's a very good partnership that CVAG and CV Housing First program and the cities of the Valley work together. And I think it's a great partnership moving forward that we continue this, and it helps out those who are unhoused living on the street. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have any other public comments on the agenda items?
No, Chair, we do not.
Okay. Then we will move on to the Chair, Committee, and CVAC staff announcements. We'll start with staff.
Thank you, Chair. I do want to echo your thanks to CVWD, and also just give you all a little update on our room logistics. There are mics in the ceiling, so and they are throughout the room. So you just want to be mindful of any whispers. They could be picked up for our Zoom audience. So I did want to make everybody aware of that. And restrooms are out in the lobby. And CVWD has been a fantastic partner for us, and we very much appreciate their staff support in helping make this work. While Palm Desert builds a beautiful new library and a future meeting room, so we're excited about that. The other announcement I just want to make is that this is Hunger Action Month. Many of your councils have acknowledged this as part of your city council meetings as well. Fine Food Bank is a great partner for our program, CV Housing First, for many of our clients, for many of clients and not just homeless individuals here in the Valley. So I did want to just acknowledge the work by Find and that this is Hunger Action Month. And for the record, we have the City of Coachella and Torres Martinez joining us as well.
Welcome.
Morning.
Is that it?
I'm done. Okay. Yes.
So we have, that's it from staff. I'd like to open it up for the committee. Do we have any committee comments for our meeting? Come on, I know there's a lot of good stuff going on out there. Like, come on. Yes, sir.
And I missed the staff comments, but I just wanted to check. Erica, have you reached out to the Coachella Valley Behavioral Health, the new one in Indio, to work with them on any homeless, home key people or any of the homeless people that we're trying to get mental health benefits for?
Yes.
That's it for me.
And the county also partners with them.
Okay, good, good.
Great.
And if you need additional information, Candace will be having the chat.
Okay, sounds good.
Yeah. I mean, actually, if I suggest, maybe in the future, Greg, or we could have staff give us an update on some of those benefits that are being used out of that behavioral health clinic in Indio. It's there. We don't hear too much about it unless you visit. You know, it would be a good idea for folks to take a visit of the facility.
It's a great facility. I did a site visit last week, and they have an advisory committee. So they asked me to be on the advisory committee for tribes. And then I was like, this is beyond tribes. So we're having conversations about stuff. So no, it's a great facility, and it's just trying to get outreach to them.
We'll make note of that as a follow-up. And we can also incorporate some of the other behavioral health partnerships that we have enacted. That's been a big key to successful housing placements, quite frankly, but we can bring that agenda item back.
Great.
Thank you for the idea.
Anything else from the committee? Do we need more caffeine in here today? Am I the only one on caffeine overload? Well, I'll just add, I think it's important that we share with the community what we're doing, like with the Navigation Center in Palm Springs, the Behavioral Health Clinic in Indio, and some of our other resources we use in the Valley. You know, I hate to sound cliche and say, well, when I was driving over here, I was thinking that a lot of people always ask us, well, what are you doing about our unsheltered population? Our meetings are in the morning. Sometimes we're so spread out, people don't hear what we're doing. But there's a lot of work going on, whether it's from our public safety folks, our outreach teams, our staff behind doors. And that's why I know people think that we have a big issue in unsheltered folks in our Valley, but we're actually doing really well. We're doing really well. Are we solving every issue? No, we're not. Everyone out there has a different story, a different challenge that we're faced with every day. But there's a lot of good work that's being out there. And for us to continue to have the confidence of our community and keep working with us and our folks in philanthropy and other resources that we can continue to gain, we have to show them our success stories and also have honest conversations about challenges we still face, right? So that's the only way we're going to fix them. So I love the idea of bringing those back to share with the community. Yes.
Speaking of, because I do agree with you, I don't want to toot our own horn, but I do think that, you know, we've had a good impact on homelessness over the last couple of years that I've been on CVAG and being a part of the homelessness committee. I know that the county is doing the AIR Summit to talk about, you know, stuff with SQMD and everybody. I think it might also be a good idea for the county to entertain an idea of doing something to talk about homelessness in the Eastern Coachella Valley, to bring more awareness to what we have accomplished, what we are accomplishing, what we're trying to get done, so that we can see what other resources are out there that we may be missing at CVAG, because not everyone necessarily knows that this is what we're trying to accomplish.
Absolutely.
We're actually having a planning meeting next week.
Perfect.
To do a homeless symposium.
That's what I love to hear, Greg.
And if I can piggyback on what you said, Chair, is that, and if you remember the point in time count presentation we did, the 4th district had the largest drop in both sheltered and unsheltered homeless individuals. And it's because of the combined efforts of the cities and just the activities that this committee has done over the years. So it really is making a big impact. We've had some really good press coverage, actually, statewide on our reductions. We've had both KESQ, KMIR, the Desert Sun did reports right after the point in time count. Just in the last month, we've had articles in the LA Times. I forget the Sacramento one out of the legislature, but even the governor has touted the reductions in Riverside County. CalMatters, thank you, Eric. I knew you'd know that. So, but it is, you know, it is important we keep getting that word out.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. So there's no other comments.
I'll throw it out. The,
there we go. Come on now.
We had a very successful city council meeting on homelessness at our last city council meeting. I can tell you that that going into that meeting, there, you know, there are a lot of strong opinions about how homelessness should be handled and who should be the point person and which organizations to support. But at the end of the day, I think the quality of the work that both the mission in India, new facility in Palm Springs, and this organization is doing won the day. And the city, you know, dramatically increased its giving to homelessness, not only supporting the initiative as recommended by CVAG, but also contributing $120,000 a year to Palm Springs and to the mission in India, each, every single one of them. So I think that when we think about, you know, our success stories, the attention we're getting regionally and statewide, this is a real example of success. And I would encourage all of us at our city council meetings to really push for continued investment in this area. I was very pleased at the outcome and was delighted and surprised.
Well, that speaks to the good work and collaborative spirit in our valley. So I appreciate your comments, council member. So if there's no further, I'll move to the next item, which is a consent calendar that's in front of you. And no one like to pull anything, I'll entertain a motion.
So moved.
Motion by Andy Wells, second by Palm Desert. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any nays? Abstentions? Consent calendar pass. We'll go to item 6.1. There's no items held over, so we'll move over to discussion items. And this item will be held by Greg Rodriguez of Riverside County's Housing and Workforce Solutions. Thank you, Greg, for joining us.
Of course. So we've had, make sure. So you've heard the news a lot, especially over the last few months, about encampment responses. Of course, we had the Supreme Court decision a while back ago over Grants Pass and Martin v. Boise before that. Additionally, the governor has tied future state funding, even though it's not as sufficient as it should be, towards encampment response. In the budget, though, for this year, this next fiscal year, there still is encampment resolution funding, and I'll get into a little bit about how we've utilized that. But I wanted to just take this time to highlight what the governor's encampment response protocols are. And I will preface this by saying that it's not really detailed. It's pretty 30,000 foot level view, but more importantly, to discuss how Riverside County has dealt with encampments, not just since the governor announced these requirements, but we've been doing this for about 4 to 5 years, actually since on the onset of COVID, so 5 to 6 years now. So I'll talk a little bit about legal framework first. On the governor's model ordinance, it emphasizes uniform state level enforcement standards. A lot of this deals with like code enforcement, public safety, and then it prioritizes obviously the constitutional compliance around Martin v. Boise and then the Supreme Court decision on Grants Pass. In Riverside County, we include comprehensive legal guidance. We adopted a 72-hour notice policy with exceptions for imminent risk, primarily when we have natural disasters, and then a strong emphasis on property rights and due process. We do this primarily because of the potential of lawsuits from civil rights organizations around the need to treat unhoused residents with dignity and respect, especially when it comes to their property rights. Many of you might have remembered we held the joint session, it's been over a year ago, 2 years almost now, I think, between this committee and public safety. And there was a lot of discussion around a regional approach to encampment response. At that time, the county was discussing whether or not we would adopt a further legal framework policy or ordinance. And at that time, we decided that our current structure between our code enforcement, the sheriff's department, and then again, the continuum of care and Office of Homeless Solutions encampment response policy was sufficient to address the needs that we felt needed to be addressed. On the operational structure, the governor's model ordinance encourages a streamlined local response team with state compliance, again, pretty 30,000 foot view level. On the county policy, we have a detailed incident command structure that's led by an encampment coordinator out of our Office of Homeless Solutions now department. We also employ a multi-departmental team. Many of you may know this as multiple disciplinary team, with specific roles. So safety manager, housing coordinators, access to behavioral health and substance use. In total, we partner with probably about 6 to 8 different agencies within the county on our operations. On notification and property handling, again, a little bit of a repeat, but this emphasizes humane treatment and notification, encourages offering shelter. The difficulty with that is the limited shelter beds available throughout the state. We've done a really incredible job in the county increasing shelter beds by over 40% in the last 3 years, and that's across the county. Many of you know that in prior years, most of the shelter beds, in fact, the majority of shelter beds were in the Coachella Valley. That's not the case at this point. We do have more shelter beds than the rest of the county, but at least it's spread out now. On Riverside County policy, again, we do the 72-hour notice unless there's an imminent danger, again, mostly natural disasters. And then again, we have detailed procedures for documenting, storing, and retrieving personal property. We work very closely with law enforcement on this as well, because they're primarily the first point of contact when it comes to property. On prioritization of response, the governor's ordinance focuses on areas of critical health safety risk with flexibility for local enforcement. You may have recently heard that there's targeting primarily Caltrans properties as well, primarily due to the risk of traffic issues and fires under bridges, especially in LA and San Francisco areas. And then on Riverside County policy, we do a trigger-based response model based on high, medium, and low priorities. Primarily, if we see, again, in high-risk areas, fire areas, primarily in the western part of the county, flooding, both here in the valley and in other parts of the county as well. And again, just by disaster, health risk, and community impact. For data technology and reporting, this is a really big priority for the governor to emphasize the use of state compliant data tools and transparency, primarily feeding our homeless management information system information into the state database system and coding and make sure that we're addressing that it's encampment response versus just plain outreach. Again, we use our HMIS, we use SharePoint, Survey 123, customized assessment apps. We've established a really customized dashboard system that we use internally. We use geolocation for our encampment response. And obviously we do quarterly and annual reports and throughout our strategic plan and throughout our encampment response protocols, it's all data driven with metrics and goals. On our community engagements and services, again, on the governor's model, ordinance requires outreach and coordination with service providers. That's pretty obvious that you would need to do that. Again, in repetition a little bit on the county, we coordinate with over 20 county departments. I said 6 to 8, but we coordinate, but actively involved usually on the encampment response are 6 to 8 of our agencies that have direct linkages to the homeless population. And then again, we prioritize housing linkage. We do the multidisciplinary support, utilizing animal services, veterans. We have a huge $8.47 million initiative with our Veterans Services Department now addressing veterans homelessness. Many of you may remember that Riverside County was one of the first counties in the nation to go to functional zero when it came to veterans homelessness. We aren't at that yet, but with this initiative, we're expecting within the year to be there. We also are almost at functional zero for youth homelessness within the county as well. And then in conclusion, this is just kind of a repetition of what I went over, but I wanted to highlight primarily Riverside County actually has been blessed, for lack of a better word, in receiving 4 encampment resolution grants from the state. The first one being the Santa Ana River Bottom. That one's been going on for about 4 years. We've housed over 160 some individuals from that area in permanent housing. 80% of those are still housed to this day. We also received one for the San Jacinto River Bottom. What we learned from the Santa Ana encampment grant was to broaden our approach instead of just focusing on one encampment. So in the San Jacinto River Bottom grant, we actually partnered or expanded the area to address to Hemet, because many of the individuals in that river bottom of San Jacinto migrate to Hemet. And so we've really done more of a regional approach, again, utilizing partnerships with the cities of Hemet and San Jacinto, which has not happened in the past. Additionally, we just got this year a Murrieta Creek Trail, and again, partnering with the cities of Lake Elsinore, Menifee, Temecula, to really do more of a regional approach around that area. So again, expanding the activities in the southwest part of the county, which have been lacking in the past, outside of Murrieta, which has done a great job over the past couple of years. And then we did a small partnership with the city of Palm Springs in an encampment response, and then utilizing the Navigation Center actually to for the transitional units to actually help in the transitional units with that. So with that, I'm happy to take any questions or comments.
I have one. So did you notice that when you were talking about people going from San Jacinto to Hemet, there, because I noticed with us, a lot of our tribal members, they live in that area, in the Banning Pass area, and a lot of our homeless people that live in that area from Banning, they go to Cabazon. And then from, and I agree, from San Jacinto, they end up going to Hemet. But I noticed that we have a large population of homeless people that go from Banning to Cabazon. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, and you know, it's in the last few months driving, I drive in Riverside every day to go to work, is the number of RVs that are popping up over there.
Yeah.
So we're starting, the county is, it's called RIVCO One. It's an integrated service delivery concept that we're doing. We're actually launching what's called a rapid improvement event in 3 weeks around the pass area to address not only homelessness, but service delivery overall to residents there. But that will be a priority. Banning does have what they call their opportunity village. It's the pallet homes that you see along the freeway there.
Fire twice, yes.
Yeah, exactly. This last one hasn't caught fire, thank God. So knocking wood. There's been some operational issues around that, but it seems to be running better. But again, it's the really lack of shelter beds in that area, as well as affordable housing units. We do have three projects that are either one is under construction and two are in the pipeline in that area that should help as well.
Okay, so, sounds good.
So when you talk about encampments, right? My understanding is that the original, like California Governor Newsom has kind of given the green light to, eliminate encampments, right? We've seen some of that in some of the bigger cities recently. I don't know how that plays into kind of the procedural notion of engaging with encampments, which is kind of what we're seeing here a little bit.
Right. And, you know, it's difficult to just clear an encampment if there's no place for someone to go. Mm-hmm. And you'll talk to law enforcement, both city police departments, as well as the sheriff's department, as they don't really want to be in the business of doing encampment clearing. In reality, what happens when you do encampment clearing, you're just pushing them to another area. So that's the approach that the county takes, and the governor alludes to taking this, you know, reasonable and compassionate approach, but does allow cities to adopt their own ordinances. But that's why the county has really gone more about it in the multidisciplinary approach, because it's far more effective. Really, again, over the past few years, is standing up more shelter beds, more transitional units. Because if we just clear a place, one, you're running into potential legal risks over violations of property destruction. Two, you're just pushing them to another area. And three, not linking them to the services really that they need, especially
around the success you're seeing ultimately is directly related to the amount of housing we've been able to create.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Right? And then what I didn't see in here is a discussion around the care courts. I don't know whether you can provide.
I can provide a lot of information on care court. So originally, when the governor proposed care court, originally he talked about it being for homelessness, and then he backtracked a little bit on that about really being for those all individuals with mental health issues. There actually was a report just released, actually by Cal Matters, that it's really not being utilized as much as it should be. You have to keep in mind that it's a voluntary system. So people, even though an individual can be referred by behavioral health or a family member, that individual has to agree to go through the process. And what you're finding is that most are not agreeing to go through the process. What we've seen in Riverside County, which is the same trend that across the state, is we've gotten a number of referrals, but very few cases that have actually led to a type of housing plan or behavioral health plan. And what we've discovered is that the vast majority of those that have not only been referred, but have participated in a housing navigation plan or a behavioral health navigation plan actually are not unhoused. They're actually people that have been more referred by families with behavioral health needs. There was legislation passed this year. It's still pending the governor's signature to increase the eligibility of those that can be referred. So we'll see if that helps.
Meaning relaxing the notion of voluntary?
No, they're not relaxing the notion of voluntary. And there was a push in some legislation last year to do that, but it didn't go through. So it's really, this legislation is really just increasing the types of behavioral health diagnoses that can be referred.
Chair, if I could provide a little bit more context, I know some of you are newer to the committee and might not have been at the joint meeting last year. When we did meet with public safety, it came after the Supreme Court ruling, and there was some discussion among some here and some of your predecessors about whether to create some sort of model ordinance for the region. And at the time, there was a lot of moving parts, care court questions, a lot of other kind of parts moving, and the county had indicated that they were re-looking at their own encampment ordinance. And so at the time, the committees all recommended and ultimately exec approved a good neighbor policy. This came to the all committees a few times, a kind of a good neighbor policy, which has been circulated to your jurisdictions for their consideration. And then we did commit to bringing back the encampment ordinance when it was finalized for any jurisdictions who may want to relook at their own encampment ordinances or strengthen or just make sure that they're mirroring or not, and how they kind of play together. So that's really why this item's kind of coming before you now. The county COC did vote over the summer. The model ordinance is attached, and it was also circulated to public safety committee as well for their information.
And I would just say additionally to the county too as well, working in conjunction with all our partners, including CVAG, Martha, CVRM, Behavioral Health, have really expanded our outreach efforts more and addressing encampments more in a proactive manner. Over the past 2 years too, we've partnered with Healthcare in Action, which is the mobile street medicine program that's been highly effective. It's study after study now is showing that street medicine is one of the most effective outreach methods that you can have, especially when you're going into encampments, because individuals will trust someone when they're providing medical assistance, even both physical and behavioral health, more than they would say in no offense law enforcement. And so we see that as a really effective model, and we'll continue to make significant investments in expanding those efforts. The county, as you know, too, has implemented our mobile crisis management teams. Originally, we only had two in the county, like 3 years ago, Amy? Now they're across every part of the county, can actually get to any location in the county within 15 to 20 minutes. So that's been a very effective tool as well.
So Greg, how are we locally measuring the success of the street medicine?
So we monitor all that through our HMIS system, Homeless Management Information System. So I would be able to get you that information if you'd like.
But when you mentioned it was a success, and I realize it is, but how are we measuring it? What do we say success is?
Basically placement into some type of either behavioral health or substance use facility,
okay,
or into transitional housing, and then ideally into permanent housing. And we track all that through our HMIS system. Healthcare in Action, they utilize HMIS. So anybody that the county funds, we require them to input that type of information into HMIS.
So that was exactly going to be my question. So in essence, medicine given to a homeless person, then the next step is creates a certain awareness or enlightenment that says I need help and gets them into the system.
Ideally, that's the goal. Yes.
Okay. To piggyback off that, you have to see the medicine being worked, the work being done out there. You know, I encourage everyone to go out there and just stand and watch. There's folks being treated on the spot, and that might be an opening for them to accept or ask for more additional help. Typically, folks don't have health care, or they don't know where to go to get it, or they may not be mentally capable of asking for assistance. They might have a friend there that's homeless as well, asking you to help them. I've witnessed it with some of our outreach teams, and they get treated on the spot with a lot of our partners. So although we do get the data, I think the success is measured with the boots on the ground.
Yeah.
We've seen it happen. And I'd like to thank you for your presentation. I know you could go all day because it's a lot of information. Nonetheless, it's important that we also put this in context when we talk about folks in the encampments. There's a lot of different kinds and of homelessness and shelter out there. He mentioned youth at nighttime. Go to one of our local big parking lots where folks feel safe. You might see a family in a vehicle with kids. You know, it happens. Or there's a tragedy in the family where folks have to escape from danger. You know, so there's a lot of different things. So I love to hear that. You know, the efforts, especially as well with veterans as well. And I like to ask staff if we could talk to the school district as well. Our school district, Desert Sands, I'm pretty sure Palm Springs does as well, offer resources as well for homelessness with our youth. I was unaware of that until I had a 2x2 with our school district maybe 2 years ago. So they also offer resources. They may have access to other things that we don't. So
yeah, and school districts, every school district has what's called a McKinney-Vento representative, and that addresses student and family unhoused. They fall under different eligibility than, say, someone on the street. Many of them are couch surfing or are in cars. There are resources, but limited. What would be the biggest benefit to those unhoused individuals or precariously housed is more preventative dollars, which we don't have. And that's the challenging part. And not to go on and on, sorry, but what we're seeing, though, and what's really disturbing is the increase in the number of seniors that are becoming homeless due to primarily loss of a partner or loved one. And then they become single income, obviously rising rents and the lack of, you know, income from them, most living just on Social Security. So we've recently prioritized individuals 70 and over on our housing choice voucher waiting list. So we prioritize veterans, seniors over 70 and families on that. We lowered that prioritization age from, I believe it was 85 before, to 70. So to try and address that. With that being said, though, we're still limited in the number of vouchers that we receive from the federal government, as well as the amount of dollars that reimburse us for that. Knock on wood, we're seeing level funding in the proposed appropriations bill, but level funding is not going to help further, efforts that we need.
Yeah, and I think it's important too. I mean, we see things on paper, with these new cases that pass, but what they're attempting to doing is what we've all been doing for a number of years, and that's try to get folks resources, try to help as much as we can. And I think it's important to have consistency across our region. So, like you mentioned earlier, so one city is not doing one thing or pushing, you know, folks to a different area. I think that's why, you know, we talked about the MOU and how that worked, and a lot of our law enforcement and folks who are doing that frontline work, they're talking and communicating, hey, we're going to be in your area. We got, you know, some people. So it's important work. You know, in Indio, we've been doing that. I mean, but it combines with compassion, accountability, and resources as well. You know, it's always outreach first. It's always services first, housing connections, mental health, a substance abuse program, job support before enforcement. Enforcement's there, and a lot of folks see our first responders out there and they think, oh, you know, they're going to give us fines. They want to incarcerate us. That's not the goal. The goal is to get people the help that they need. Some of those places where we go, we have to just be honest. It might not be the safest place for some of us to be at. So they have access to those places. But regardless of if folks are under a bridge or if they're in a parking lot, they still deserve the respect and compassion that we give to everyone. So I thank you for the work you're doing, Greg. And if there's no other further comments, yes.
Greg, when you clear an encampment, in the last several months, have you seen a change in the propensity of individuals to accept shelter and assistance?
Yes, we have. And not everyone does. I mean, just to be candid, not everybody does. But again, it's through the constant engagement that we're doing. And when we do on all of our encampment response systems, you know, I talked about the 72-hour timeline. We don't really adhere to that. It really takes 2, 3, 4 months, to be honest with you. But we have seen much more engagement and much more individuals willing to go into service.
And do you have anything to attribute that to?
I just think it's been more hands-on approach, and it's been really the multidisciplinary approach to it, not relying on law enforcement. Again, what we've really tried to do in the county is establish, again, with partners, not only service partners, but primarily behavioral health, increasing our outreach efforts, again, through the mobile crisis management teams, through the CBAT teams that partner with law enforcement to take some of the load off of law enforcement, and really, again, through the healthcare street medicine is utilizing different approaches for outreach so that you're getting more comfort of buy-in from those individuals.
So there's no further on that one. This is the information one. So we can move forward to.
Yeah. And I'm going to sit down.
Oh, you're going to sit down on this? Okay. Are you sure?
I don't have a PowerPoint. So.
Okay. So the next item is, 7B, and it is countywide trends on housing and placement. And Mr. Rodriguez will continue with this one as well.
And I won't spend a whole lot of time on this, but I just wanted to approach. There's been a lot of discussion around the effectiveness of Housing First. You're actually seeing some disturbing proposals at the federal level on the continuum of care notice of funding. Application, both in the build one and then in the upcoming one for regular COC funding, about getting away from Housing First and harm reduction and really emphasizing more treatment, which to me is harm reduction. But to Councilmember Taylor's point too, and to the, you know, the data that we're seeing and the success within Riverside County, the success that the CVAG program has shown over the last has been now 7, 8 years now, through the Housing First model, really does work. That doesn't mean that you don't have other aspects of programming. So shelters play a critical role because to get individuals directly off the street, substance use treatment plays a critical role. Behavioral health treatment plays a critical role. But what you've seen through the data and through studies, not only county data, but statewide data and nationwide data, is that when you utilize a housing first approach, it's far more effective. The average within Riverside County on successful permanent placement into housing out of a shelter is around 15 to 20%. Through our housing first programs, and CVAG is at about a 26%, but that's just through one program. Through another one that we track through HMIS, or they track internally, it's about an 80% success rate. Countywide, that's the same success rate as well as when we're utilizing the Housing First.
That doesn't mean that we don't utilize a shelter system to get someone immediately off the street, but what we try to do is immediately get them into some type of transitional housing unit and then eventually permanent supportive housing units as well. A lot of reason I just bring this up is because of some of the language coming out of the federal government, but we've seen this, I don't want to use the word confusion, it's not the right word, but I think it's lack of clarification from organizations that are utilizing a Housing First model on what Housing First actually is. Because what a lot of the critics say is, well, you're just putting them into housing and leaving them there. That's not Housing First. Housing First is providing them immediate shelter in a permanent setting, and then providing the wraparound services, whether that's case management with a housing plan, substance use treatment, and mental health. And so that's really what I wanted to emphasize today, is for us to be cautious of what's coming from the federal level. We as a county, though, will continue to utilize the Housing First model. Even if the feds bar us from utilizing federal funds for that, we will utilize our state dollars as well as our healthcare system dollars that we have as well to continue that, because we know it works. We would not have seen a 19% reduction in unsheltered homelessness within the county if we were utilizing only a shelter-based system, because we don't have enough shelter beds in the first place to do that. So really brief on that. Happy to take any questions, but it's been a conversation over the last couple, 2 to 3 years, primarily again from those that just aren't as well informed on what the actual Housing First model is. And really, I think CVAG's been really a leader in demonstrating that, especially in our region. And I've said this many times before, has been a model example for other parts of the county to adopt the same type of model.
So you obviously, in your role, travel throughout the state of California and meet with other counties. Most counties have a Housing First model. So why is ours working and theirs not, based on your experience?
So there are many working throughout the state. I'll even say in LA, believe it or not. I just think we started it long before most people did. I mean, you know, when Roy's closed 8 years ago now, 7 years ago now, whenever Manuel was appointed, because it was that week. We started really adopting that Housing First model, even though it had already been out there. I just don't think people were utilizing it to the level that they were. We've made a very deliberate effort through our continuum of care and how we fund programming to not require, but emphasize the necessity of using Housing First. We've invested heavily in those efforts, especially in the construction of affordable housing, the $40 million project in Palm Springs for the transitional aspect of it. And in the 4th District, Coachella Valley, we've built more housing units than the rest of the county combined. Mm-hmm. In fact, there was just a report out that Riverside County actually is building more affordable housing units than any other jurisdiction in Southern California outside of LA. So it's really just been a really concentrated effort on that. But Councilman Taylor, that doesn't mean that we have ignored the shelter systems or other aspects. We're very lucky as a county too, because many counties don't have their own behavioral health system or to the level that ours does. And so we've utilized our behavioral health department again, not only for behavioral health, but they do our substance use treatment. Our behavioral health department built more board and care facilities, or acquired more board and care beds in the last 3 years than any other county combined in the state. And again, that's just another throughput that helps us do that. And that technically is a Housing First model, because you're getting them into a permanent facility for treatment, and then those facilities in conjunction with our behavioral health department work on a housing navigation plan to get them placed. So I just think we've been laser focused, say, more than other jurisdictions. But if you go to places even like Oakland, San Francisco, even in Fresno, they're utilizing the same model and seeing the same type of success.
And then I think the last question for me would be, where does kind of public-private model fit in there? And I'm talking about private, not only being, you know, like missions, et cetera, like that.
Yeah. So like the NDO behavior.
Is it the success of the local organization that also accelerates success overall in placing homeless?
Yeah, so we rely on private property owners. We rely on institutions like the NDO Behavioral Health Clinic, many other substance use providers that are private. Martha's and CVRM get huge philanthropic dollars from private individuals. But the majority of it comes from public funding. Do I think more private individuals should contribute? Of course. But that's the reality of it. So.
Thank you for that, Greg. And I think it's important, too, that we say housing first model. But the goal is to get a roof over someone's head so they can start working on those other services so we can get them those wraparound services. And that's what it is. And like you said, there's a misconception out there that we want to get folks in an apartment or some housing and just walk away. That is far from the truth. Whether it's shelter, affordable housing, workforce housing, inclusionary housing, one of the things that we've been able to do in India with some of our developers, if it's not an affordable housing complex, if it's for the market rate, we'll ask them, hey, can you give me 15% for veteran or for senior or for a single family? And we've been successful doing that. So there's a lot of different ways and techniques out there that we have to chase and follow with the goal in mind being to get folks shelter. And so I appreciate that. Do we have any other comments or questions for Mr. Kirk? I'm sorry, Mr. Kirk, you're over there and you're just this beaming of light. And so you're on my mind.
It doesn't.
I'm not nearly as eloquent.
But excuse me. for Greg, but we appreciate your work, Greg. My time on this board and actually public safety as well, you've done a lot of work. So we appreciate the work that you've been doing as well. And so if there's no further, that's also information as well. But now we'll move on to item C, which is Mr. Kirk. For election of homelessness committee officers.
Yeah, I'm sure I want to echo. Thanks, Greg, for being here. We used to have Greg all to ourselves in the 4th District. We went to accept a position countywide. We were worried that we wouldn't see him nearly as much. We don't, but we know you're doing great work countywide.
Thank you.
It is that time of year again to elect your chair. Just for those that may not be aware, CVAC does not have a policy on the rotation of chairs. You can be chair for 30 years or 1 year. I suppose if you're kicked out half a year. Right now, your chair is Councilman John Pena. Your vice chair, of course, is Councilman Furman. Mr. Pena, as far as I know, didn't say whether he wanted to do it again or not. With that, are there any nominations?
I'll nominate Wayman for chair.
All right. Are there any other nominations? We have a nomination for chair. Nominations are now closed. We have a motion and a
second.
All in favor say
aye.
Anybody opposed? Congratulations. Why don't you lead the nominations for vice chair?
Absolutely. So I'd like to open it up for vice chair and actually thank you to this committee. I came into local government as a correctional officer in public safety. And I worked last night, so I'm running on fumes a little bit. Nonetheless, I had the spirit of public safety in mind. Nonetheless, I fell in love with working with the unsheltered population and learning from a lot of folks here, and also things like transportation. So there's a lot of great things going on in the CVAC. So it's an honor and a privilege to serve on this committee with a lot of great people, not only here, but out in our valley, with the goal in mind to give folks shelter. So thank you for this opportunity. And I'd like to open it up for a nomination for vice chair.
Joseph.
I'll second that. So we have a motion for tribal member, Councilmember Morales, president, chair, right? Chair. Councilmember, Chair Morales. And I would accept the. Do we need to vote on that? No,
nope. Yes. Do we?
You know, so all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any nays? Any abstentions? our vice.
Mr. Chair, building on, I know it's a little off topic and I should have brought it up earlier. You mentioned offering or suggesting that members go out and see this population on their own. That's sometimes, where do you start and how do you do that? I know you've done it more often than most. And I do it once a year. And in fact, I just reached out to our team to suggest I get out there again. If any of you would like to do a ride along for a morning or part of a day, let me or Erica know, and we'd be happy to accommodate you. It is thankless work, and thank you for doing it and the team, and really instructive, and particularly the partnership with law enforcement is instructive, particularly, and see how they help our. If it wasn't for law enforcement, we would not have the success that we do with our program. So they're critical to the teamwork. So hit us up on it anytime.
Thank you. So that will conclude that. The next item is information, social attendance record, official member updates, new location for CBAC public meetings, and update and unaudited, excuse me. Oh, we do have a ex officio. Oh, okay, I'm sorry.
Of course. I always have to.
It's on the information side. Okay.
So thank you so much. Congratulations to both of you. I am honored to be an ex officio and will continue to do so as long as you let me. I am Angelina Coe. I'm the executive director of Shelter from the Storm. For those of you who may not know who I am, I thank you again for your time. I will keep it as brief as possible. I know we don't meet in October, but October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. So I have to put the little purple flag out there to let you know. We are continuing to move forward with our efforts to help those that are fleeing intimate partner domestic violence. And what we're doing for October is our Purple Thursdays. So every Thursday in October, we will be wearing purple in honor of those that did not get the opportunity to leave the abusive relationship and lost the battle with their partner, and honor those that are still continuing the fight and seeking out services, because we are here for them, we believe them, and want to support them. On October 16th, it is National Purple Thursday Day, and we're asking people to not just wear purple that day, but also put their money where their mouth is and support a local domestic violence shelter, and in the Coachella Valley, that thus. So there will be links on our social media and our website to help support. And what we're asking is if people can donate $10 and wear purple that day, and the $10 is in honor of, I'm wearing purple, I'm giving $10. Because I believe survivors, and they should be able to leave. The other things we're doing a series on GV 101, and we're going to different community providers to offer that series so that people understand what is domestic violence, what is happening in our community, what our efforts are being done, and why are we the only domestic violence shelter in the Valley? So that is one of the other things that we're doing. And we're also doing Challenge 100. We're asking for the next 100 days, starting October 1st, that people come to our social media and speak out on why they believe domestic violence is an issue and why they believe survivors. And then also, our goal is to raise $100 for each person that posts something. The goal is at the end of the 100 days to have raised a minimum of $25,000. So if you can share that, I will make sure to have all those flyers and information put out there. Also, let you know that we are a big part of this collaborative as well. And one of the things, I think, I don't remember who asked the question, is why are these efforts working? It's because you're putting a name to the issue and you're giving it a voice. And when people know that you care, and it's not just one agency, it's not just CBRM, it's not just Martha's, it's not just CB Housing First, it's a collaborative. You're giving a name to the issue and a voice to the people that need it the most. And I applaud you for that effort. And we're honored to be a part of it. And I apologize for taking longer than I should, but thank you so much for your time.
If you have a flyer and you want to send it to me, we can make sure that
I will get them to you guys and you can distribute them. And if you have questions, you can always reach me. So thank you so much.
I love that. You put a name to the issue. I love this. Do we have any other ex officio updates? So now we'll move to public comment on agenda items. And I know I have one non-agenda item comment from Elena Kalamanis. And I believe she you have a guest. You can also bring your guest up along with you if you like, or?
Hi, my name's Alan Kalamanis. This is not how I wanted this to go, because Jeff, if Jeff Neesney, who is not here with me, he's a homeless person. So he was going to be presenting 99.9% of this. He's a very important community member of the homeless community. Well, what his problem, not that he didn't want to be here, because he put this presentation together. It's that as a homeless person, he can sleep. And no phone call will wake him up. Nothing will wake him up. I can tell you, I've called him about 20 times, sent him text messages. But I want to introduce myself first. If you go to the page that says introductions, my name's Alana Kalamanis. I'm the program coordinator with Read With Me Volunteer Programs. And I'm also just recently elected to the Board of Trustees for the CBUSD, and not elected, but nominated. And I'm also the secretary for Street Samaritan Alliance, which is the organization that Jeff wanted my help to create. And I'm obviously going to be out of time if there's any chance.
No, thank you so much. You're fine.
Okay. So Jeff is homeless. His journey of homelessness happened 5 years ago. 5 years ago here. He was a top mortgage banker producer in the state of Texas in Houston for 20 years. And a series of unfortunate circumstances made him homeless. He came here 5 years ago. So he's gone throughout the valley for his homelessness. The way he's finally pulling himself out of the situation is that he came to us at our church and said, anything you can do to help me get a car, because the job opportunities I was looking at required transportation. And we got together and got him a car, registration and so on. And that really changed his life, because now he had an opportunity to go after things he couldn't go after before. So that was his impetus for wanting to start this nonprofit, and there's an URL for that, streetsamaritanalliance.com, and you can go ahead and take a look at it. But what he also wanted to tell you is he, as a single male, not a veteran, not on drugs, having no problems, how difficult it is for him. So he gave a perspective on, what happens at the current shelters and how they don't do enough to, they throw you out, you have to come back, apply every day, and they don't have control over their lives anymore, don't have control of the possessions. They're rigid rules. So he talks about here, from the eyes of his perspective, what do we need to do if we take a look at housing those people? And there's so many people out there. I have to tell you, I was recruiting for Read With Me yesterday at the Wellness Center in La Quinta, and I recognized this gentleman who came in as homeless. I've done enough, going to your point, doing a ride-by with Jeff in the car with you to really show you what's going on out there would be amazing. So that's why I'm so upset he's not here. But this person at the Wellness Center, he came up to our table and we had some snacks, and I knew he was coming after the snacks. It is a cooling and heating station. And I said to my colleague that, he's not going to be wanting to know about our Read With Me program. And he happened to overhear me saying that. And when he came back later, when my colleague was gone, he goes, why did you make that comment? And I said, I know you're homeless. Because I recognized that he had a bicycle outside with his possessions on it. And he goes, yes, and I'm trying really, really hard to get out of my situation. And I said to him, you're trying to launch this organization, Street Alliance, streetsamaritanalliance.com, that will provide funding for someone who needs some kind of immediate funding, like we gave Jeff for the car, so that, and he goes, oh my God, that's just what I need. I'm trying to get out of the situation. So we have a whole population of homeless people that fall out of the cracks of, like your program, and so on. So he talks about what are the basic necessities of a shelter, that where people want to be and want to get better and want to get out of the situation. So it's worth looking at that. And it's just not providing quarters, but it providing food. You can put somebody in the shelter, but if they don't have an employment yet to get food, they're in trouble. Gated and locked storage for their personal belongings. That's why we see them with shopping carts, right? Because they have to put their, they have to keep their stuff, because if they don't, it's stolen. You know, when Jeff falls asleep like he does, I can't tell you how many things he's gotten stolen. He put his bicycle on the back of his car and he fell asleep in the car and the bicycle was stolen off the back of his car. You know, it's just, they need locked facilities. They need showers and laundry rooms, internet access and printing, because they're going after looking for these jobs. You know, just basic types of things like that. And that's only, this shelter would only be for people who want to better their situation, don't have, you know, mental illness or anything like that. And then the final thing I wanted to talk about is, he wanted to duplicate the success he had with being able to get a car. So we want to do fundraising from private donors, from CVAG or whoever, where we can provide the outreach for those things that are critical for someone to help them today without the bureaucracy. For instance, we got a request the other day, and we're not really up and running, but because of the fact that he's still in the homeless community, they needed a uniform so that they could go to work. So, you know, we provided them money to get a uniform. And I mean, you know, you wouldn't think that providing $200 is life-changing, but it is, because they got the employment. So that's what our Street Samaritan Alliance is looking to do. And you really need to talk to Jeff. So since the next meeting is 2 months from now, maybe we can individually approach the cities and talk to a tribe and talk to you about what we feel is really critical for being able to help this part of the homeless population. This presentation, you get back to me.
If I make a suggestion, you're more than welcome to attend any city council meeting to share his testimony. I'm pretty sure it's very powerful. We do have his information in front of us. Like you mentioned, we have 2 more months. We welcome you to come back and bring him. But like I said, there's opportunities out there to go to other council meetings as well. You can also contact CVAC staff to coordinate some of those efforts as well.
Great. Thank you so much. Any other advice?
Yeah, thank you for
booking money.
Thank you for joining us. In the interest of time, I'd like to offer. Thank you. Any other public comment on non-agenda items or anyone else?
Yeah. Sure. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Appreciate your time.
All right. I'm not up here just to hear my own voice, but I wanted to give a couple updates on street light projects. If you guys want to come out and join us in the streets, we welcome you. You'll see a different perspective getting out there with us. I do have a success story. We got another person off the streets. We did utilize a Coachella Valley Rescue Mission. He graduated the Gateway program, got rid of his legal issues, and we got him a full ride scholarship into a real estate school. And so right now he's taking his real estate classes and he's going to join our crew. So
I think that deserves a round of applause.
And that's not including the lady that's living in our casita. My wife and I let a lady live in our casita who's also become a realtor, and she's kicking ass. Like, she's doing amazing. So that's cool. One thing I wanted to ask mainly Greg about, I know this is not usually a question answer thing, but part of that housing first philosophy is great in its core ideas. Get somebody off the streets and they're more inclined to get off the drugs and do the right thing, especially with mentorship and counseling. I think the pain point with a lot of people is the cost associated with it and the efficiency of building these projects. I mean, if you look at the cost per unit, it's insane. That's why I've always been talking about the tiny home campuses and stuff like that. And a roof over their head is a roof over their head. But I think there's an efficiency side that we need to be aware of and utilize those dollars to the best capacity as we can. Part of that also is the building costs associated with it. A lot of times we're contracting builders and stuff. I'd ask you once before, Greg, is the county or the state or anybody working on building like factory automation, like actual factories that build prefab designs to create a better efficient platform as far as, you know, building units or affordable housing.
I'm technically not supposed to answer questions, but that's exactly what was done at the Palm Springs Navigation Center. Those are prefab.
Yeah, they are prefab, but the unit cost was, you know, I just admittedly really high. So that's why
I don't want to get
that. No, I don't. But that's why I was just asking if the state's like investing in their own factories,
yep,
you know, to build these things. So just throwing it out there. Yes, that's all I have.
Thank you, Chris. We appreciate it. I think that's it for public comment. Not agenda. We have said okay. The next item is announcements. Is our next meeting is November 19, 2025, and it will be here as well. And then we also have an executive committee meeting on the 29th at 4:30. There's no other question or comments. This meeting is adjourned.
All right.
How are you?